You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, I'm really fortunate to be able to share the stories, the expertise, the knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. There's a really, really important topic. So this week, we're going to be talking all about mental health. And to do that, we're joined by friend of the station, James Constable of Oxford United, and also Rebecca Lisi of Rebecca Lisi Therapy. This is the Business Brunch, and we're going to introduce our two lovely experts after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. For those who are just tuning in, today we're talking about the really important topic of mental health. And to do that, we're joined by two absolute experts who have kindly agreed to share their time to give an insight to you, the listener. So let's introduce them for those who don't know our guests. James, welcome. Welcome back on the show for the second time. For those who don't know you, give an insight to you and your background. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. Morning, Ben. Morning, Rebecca. So yeah, my background really growing up, desperate to play football. I think that was always my dream. And fortunately enough, I managed to get the opportunity at Warsaw when I was 21. So I came in relatively late as a professional. So obviously loved that, desperate to play, didn't quite work out, had sort of spells where I was out of the squads and not traveling and not being part of it. So fortunately got the opportunity to move to Kidderminster, obviously onto Shrewsbury and ended up at Oxford. Similarly to my time at Walsall, wasn't going to play at Shrewsbury, so sent me out on loan, and fortunately I landed here, which was meant to be for a year originally, lasted six, and absolutely loved my time playing here, and then spent 5 years down on the south coast at Eastleigh, and then sort of wrapped up at Banbury during COVID, so as a whistle-stop tour really of my footballing career.
Absolutely. No, amazing. We won't talk about the county ground, although I have just already done that. And Rebecca, for those who don't know you and don't know your business, intro yourself.
Well, hi, I'm Rebecca Lisi. So I'm a fully qualified psychotherapist and I also work as a mental health trainer. I have a particular interest in working with men's mental health, and I have done for the last 10 years. So both in private practice and in various different institutions. I'm particularly passionate about creating training, mental health training and awareness that's really accessible for everybody, but kind of focuses on the sort of core psychological principles that I have kind of come to understand over the past 10 years and hopefully can kind of just support everybody in their everyday life, really.
Amazing, amazing. Rebecca, I'm going to pick on you first. So as with James later in the show, you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Well, I'm a psychotherapist, and when I was thinking about songs, they all seemed a bit trite. So I've gone for Robert Palmer's Addicted to Love.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in following that great song choice chosen by Rebecca, we've introduced our two experts, James Constable and Rebecca Lisi, who both have kindly agreed to share their time and give their story and indeed some practical things for you to maybe think about. James, I'm really keen to talk about that football journey, if that's okay. And we'll talk about your more current role, if that's okay, in a moment. But I think a big thing that's reported in football is there is a tiny percentage that make it, and there's a huge percentage that are told no or released, whether that be early in the career going through an academy, or whether that be later in the career, not maybe squad sizes not being as big and maybe not having a club. How tough is that mentally, and maybe give an insight into kind of what you've seen in that area?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think it's less than 1%, I think the stats say, of academy players that go on to make sort of a professional career. So it is a tiny fraction. I think at the time growing up playing, it was maybe sort of my parents that sort of took that burden on. I think for myself, I just love playing football. I was out there enjoying it. I don't think it was really a big thing, academies and things when I was growing up. It wasn't certainly on my radar. It was just for me just to be enjoying with my mates, enjoying my football. And I think my dad had sort of played at a certain level, semi-pro, and he had always sort of instilled in me, just go out there, enjoy it. If you're playing well and you're having fun, you're attract attention if that's what you want to do. If you don't, you want to play sort of grassroots and then non-league football. That to me was sort of successful. I think at 21, I was playing non-league for Chippenham Town. I was coaching. I was at college during that time as well. So for me, I'd sort of come to terms with that, and I was quite happy with that journey. I was getting paid to play football. I was coaching younger kids. I was having time with my mates. It seemed like a perfect sort of life if that was what it was going to be. I'd sort of come to terms with, I was quite happy to do that. I obviously dreamed of being a professional footballer, and I think that would always be there. But I think for me, I was quite happy with that setup. And it was only sort of the off chance that someone came and watched a game. And from that, I got invited to trials. And within the space of sort of 3 weeks, I'd gone from quite comfortable with my life, living with my parents and no real responsibilities, to signing for Walsall, moving away from home, packing up my life and living on my own. So, it happens really quickly. And like you say, I think, as I mentioned, the stats are incredibly low, but I also think you need a huge, huge amount of luck, which I was fortunate enough to have as well.
Absolutely. And Rebecca, James, of course, had that support network around him from his dad and family, and very level-headed about it. But do you have any advice for maybe those who don't have that support network in terms of some of the things that they can consider to still love your football, staying on football for a moment, but actually be prepared for that, I guess, resilience to potentially not make it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the strongest, most important things that we see is the need for community. So support, whether that comes from, like James, you mentioned, you were fortunate to have the support of your parents, whether it's a good group of friends, whether it's other family members. I think it's really important that whoever it is and whatever situation they're in, that they've got a good support network. So that looks like people that they can talk to, people that they can be honest with, people that they can lean on in times when things aren't going well. And I think we all absolutely need that as individuals, but particularly if you're in a very high stress situation or there's lots of changes going on. And I think this is one of the ways that the football community comes together amazingly well, is this kind of sense of community and support and all kind of, shared kind of intention. And I think that's one of the things that can really be kind of built upon. And I think it is being massively built upon in terms of extending kind of support networks to younger people through, grassroots football clubs, but pretty much, all through the scale. I think even the higher you get, the more stress and pressure, and it's about building that internal resilience, which we can absolutely are going to need our community for.
And just staying with you, Rebecca, if that's okay, because I think something that people close to you will know, but not everybody, so hopefully you don't mind me outing you for this, is that you were a professional actress. And I think that there's similarities between acting and football in terms of you only a tiny percentage make it, and you're going to get a lot of no's. How did you find that journey for you?
Yeah, great. Well, no, absolutely, I don't mind being outed at all. So before I trained to be a psychotherapist, I went to drama school. So I left school, went to drama school, got an agent, did theatre stuff, thought, this is great, did Shakespeare at the Globe. But those were kind of the highlights. And what people didn't see was the hundreds of auditions that you go to every day and get rejected for, told, if only you were a bit more this or a bit more that, or, if you're just a bit taller or just a bit shorter. And also kind of, the nepotism of who, and I'm sure that gets played out in other areas as well. And I think There's something the resilience thing is really, really difficult because it's what happens behind closed doors that people don't necessarily appreciate. And they will sort of see you when you are doing really well, and you are performing in a great show and, everything's going well, but they don't see the hours and hours of rehearsals that have gone into that show. Similarly with football, the hours and hours of coaching, the injuries that are sustained, that the how much it takes to overcome all of those things. They just see you when you're playing on the pitch or performing in the theatre. And I think the other thing is it's so easy for us to critique those performances without having any real insight into the journey that's gone on beforehand. And we do this all the time, and I've been witness to this in football matches, and you kind of, you can hear some of the people in the crowd saying things, and you think, you've got no idea what journey this guy's been on to get to this point. And I think that was one of the hardest things for me to overcome and really try and understand in terms of just keeping showing up and doing my job, and doing the best that I can despite all that, that noise.
And I think this would come on really well to you, James, if that's okay, in terms of there are highs and lows in football, aren't there? There is the, a whole stadium singing your name, and then there's for certain players, there's miscommunicated stories, and you're suddenly the worst person in the world. How do footballers, like, what support are there for footballers to be able to, I guess, cope with that? And they shouldn't cope, need to cope with that, but how, what does that support network look like?
Yeah, as you say, I think for me, when I was playing, social media wasn't such a big thing, and I remember sort of vividly, like my only time I would hear criticism was maybe on a match day or walking to and from stadiums if we were playing away. But nowadays, it's just so easy for the players to be contacted, and they some of the abuse that the players get is just it's above what ever should be expected in any industry, any sport. So I think for us, it's always something that's in the back of our mind. We're hoping we're not having to deal with these things. We're looking after the day-to-day stuff for the players and making them sort of settle into the county and enjoy their football, and dealing with those bits are fine. But like I say, having to have a chat with them because they've received abuse or given the tools to be able to report it is not something that we like to do and should be doing. So I think for the players now, they get so much support from the PFA, the FA, the EFL, obviously ourselves at the football club. Again, something that we didn't really have. I think when I played, it was far from the case that I say when for me personally, when Swindon tried to sign me, I felt completely isolated from the group. I wasn't allowed to train with the group. I was told my future at the club was finished. Even then, there was no one really I could turn to other than my sort of family and sort of loved ones. I didn't really have a contact number or someone at the football club that I could speak to, or let's say equally the EFL, PFA. We knew of the organisations. We didn't know the routes or the proper signposted ways to contact people. So I think a lot of the time you just cracked on and dealt with it yourself. And I think for the players now, my job especially is as back as player liaison at the football club now in the first team is to make them aware of all the support they do have. They're not alone in any of this, like whether that's sorting out a parking ticket, sorting out anything they need, but also this side of sort of mental health and ensuring they're in the best position to go out on a weekend and play the best they can.
No, absolutely. No, absolutely. James, as with Rebecca, you're going to be a radio DJ just for a moment. What's your song choice and why have you picked it?
So yeah, it's slightly different. I think for me, it's one of those. I spend a lot of time in the car and with my daughters a lot. So I've got two girls, and the K-pop demon song from the film Golden is one that I think is etched into my brain. Every lyric, I hear it constantly. So I think for my youngest, Molly, I think that's what the one I'm going to pick.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is the Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Molly, hopefully you enjoyed that and hopefully you're making Dad sing along. If you are just tuning in, we're joined by James Constable and Rebecca Lisi, and we're talking all about the world of mental health. And it's an important thing. I think a phrase that I heard is that everybody's human and everybody has feelings, everybody has emotion, and you know, everybody is a person. I think it's really, really, really important that we remember that. Rebecca, I'm keen to move to organisations, if that's okay, whether it be, you know, a football club or whether it be a tiny recruitment agency or anything in between. What should organisations be doing to ensure that they are looking after the mental health or indeed physical health of their people? What's that responsibility?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's really important to identify that mental health is as important as physical health, and there's absolutely no getting away from the fact that the two are so intrinsically linked. And if we look after our minds, you know, that has an impact on our bodies. I think one of the key things, and I can't stress this enough, is awareness, education and training. And I think that's something that lots of different institutions are putting in place now. But I think we need qualified professionals who are going in, who are doing proper training, you know, with a fully psychological understanding, breaking down things like knowledge of the nervous system, how can we work with our own bodies, especially in sport. Lots of education around things like our main stress hormones, cortisol, the impact that has on physical inflammation in our body, you know, how we can use our minds to look after our bodies and vice versa. So I think good training, education and awareness is fundamental. I think creating sort of psychologically safe environments, whether that's in a team or whether that's in an office or, you know, a university. So what that looks like in real terms, because I think it's one of those sort of words that's thrown around a lot. But what that actually looks like is creating spaces where people feel comfortable speaking out when they have problems, that a culture is created where we have people kind of role modelling vulnerability in terms of being able to actually say, look, this is something that's going on. And I could do with signposting somewhere and normalising that as much as we do physical injuries or issues. And I think sometimes what happens in patterns that I've noticed with my clients is that very often it's much easier to talk about a physical manifestation of pain than it is a psychological one. So very often my clients will present with a bad back or a bad shoulder, but actually we need to be thinking about what's going on psychologically under that issue and how that injury and how we can support them through that, through understanding what else is going on, particularly in the mind. So I think the main thing is as well, so lots of awareness. I think that's something that's massively changing at the moment. So I'm working with the Joey Beacham Foundation at the moment, piloting some mental health training for grassroots coaches. And that's taking place next month. And hopefully that will be reaching out to other clubs as well. And I think keeping this conversation going and strong signposting to professionals. So, you know, your job is, as a coach, as a human being, you know, as a teacher, it is not to try and fix somebody or offer them counselling. It's just to notice changes in people's behaviour. Notice if there's something that doesn't feel right or if someone's acting in a way that you might be concerned about, and raise that with somebody who's in a position then to either support them or signpost them to somebody who is in a position to help. You know, a professional.
Oh, absolutely. James, I think one of the things that would be a really interesting insight for our listeners and something that you do so well and the club do so well is That support of a player when moving to a new area. So, Oxford have been very fortunate to attract players from all around the world, haven't they? And actually moving to Oxford with, with a new city, a new job, new people around, what is that process of making them feel really welcome and making them feel at home and maybe giving that platform to ensure that they are going to have the best chance of good mental health and good physical health and feel at home? What does that process look like? Because I think that some of the businesses listening could really learn a lot from football in that way.
Yeah, as you say, we're in a fortunate position where we can attract players from Korea and Belgium, Holland, Indonesia. So I think it is for me. I always put, and it's really sort of helpful to put myself in that position when I, like say, moved to Warsaw and I was put in a hotel in the middle of November and I was there until the beginning of January and I didn't really have anyone checking on me and I was going, finishing training straight back to the hotel, sitting there till the morning and then going back to training again. So I found it quite lonely, quite isolating. So I think for me it's handy to be able to use that as a tool to say, look, if put myself in, say, a Marcelino shoes or a Jin Woo's shoes, how would they feel arriving in a country? And the best way to describe it is if I was just dropped in Korea, could I sort of do it? I don't think I could, even at sort of 41 years old. I think I would struggle to get sorted and get settled in a place. So I think that's for me is a key to how quickly we get them, like say, out of the hotel into either a rented property or an Airbnb, somewhere where they can have the sort of like the usuals they would have at home, a kitchen, a place to make some food. At the hotel, you're very stuck. You're having to sort of eat out or order food in. It's very difficult. So I think for me that's one of the first things, but also just make them aware that we're here. We're here 24/7, and let's say sometimes to my detriment, I get calls and texts all through the early hours. But I think for me, it's so important that they feel they can do that. And like I say, they wouldn't message me if they didn't feel like I was the right person to speak to. So I think for me, that's a real key indicator that what we're offering and what we're doing is right. But yeah, just get them settled as quickly as possible. Obviously, looking at cars as soon as they arrive, especially the guys from the January window wouldn't have had bank accounts, so we need to get that set up. And we work with Barclays, and they sponsor the Premier League and EFL. So again, just little things like that sometimes are forgotten. They arrive without any ways to buy things or spend money. So again, just all these little bits go to getting them settled as quickly and like I say, as efficiently as possible, so they can focus on sort of the main reason they're here, and that's to play football. But it does take time. I think every player is different. Some settle a lot quicker, some take a little bit more time. Again, even things like the time difference in traveling, especially Marcelino, Ola, trying to speak to some of your family back home is very difficult. When you finish training, it's already the middle of the night there. So you're constantly trying to play catch up. So again, I think it all comes down to just being there, being present, and making them aware that they can contact us day or night, whatever their issues are, they feel comfortable to do that. And like I say, we're a good sort of group here, staff, players. We all work together to try and get over any issues and get them sort of comfortable and back playing as quickly as possible.
No, absolutely. It really re resonates with the business world as well. As regular listeners will know, I run a recruitment business, and I think that induction, and really looking at that whole person as opposed to just the job that they're doing or the pay packet they're taking, and thinking about how can you make sure that they feel at home, is so key. I was really fortunate to move to Moscow, as you do, at 19 by myself, and do you know what? I couldn't speak the language. Very similar to some of the players coming to Oxford, and not knowing where to go for dinner, not knowing how to have a bank account is huge. Rebecca, I'm really keen to stay on inductions, if that's okay, and just talk about how can mental health be brought into the inductions of new employees, and how do you set your stall out early to make it, to make it an inclusive and safe space?
Really good question. And I think, everybody goes about these things differently. I think the most important thing is having some open conversations right from the beginning, having whoever's leader or in charge or perceived to be the authority be kind of modeling that There's an openness, there's an opportunity to bring yourself to the role, to the job, and that there's clear, again, signposting. Lots of people, unfortunately, mental health is still a stigma, and we know that, especially in the workplace, people don't want to necessarily open up and share, a history of mental health problems on whatever spectrum that might be, from kind of, some mild anxiety to severe enduring mental illness. So I think we need to be mindful that, we're still trying to create spaces where people find themselves comfortable to reveal as much or as little about themselves as they feel is necessary or appropriate in their specific role or institution. I think the thing is to create an environment where there is opportunities for a further conversation. So, I think it's also really important to acknowledge that, as employers, I don't employ anybody, but as an employer, you're not a mental health professional, you're not someone's counselor, and you're not someone's doctor. So, I think although we want to create places that offer awareness and support, I think it's important that employers don't feel that they have to cross over into a practitioner or clinical role when supporting mental health. So that brings me back to just kind of reiterating the importance of signposting. And I'm a huge advocate for having external support, mental health support, resources, psychologists, therapists coming into institutions and offering training and support, as opposed to the more traditional model, which is a kind of a EAP where the employees are expected to reach out and find their own support. That's not necessarily for everybody, particularly because you need to be very careful when you are seeking therapy because it's not a regulated profession. In terms of signposting, you want to make sure that you're working with somebody who's got the right qualifications. So I think it's about creating a space where, if there are problems, people feel comfortable enough to be able to address them, know where to be signposted to. If that's in-house, that's one thing. I think the issue with that is that, especially in work environments, people aren't necessarily comfortable with accessing in-house resources still, because there is that potential for a stigma to be attached around, if I go to the counsellor, if I go to a therapist, am I going to lose my job or be seen to be lesser than? And actually, how much do I want my colleagues to know about my private life? So I think it's still something that we're trying to figure out, in terms of finding that happy medium, a place that supports both employees and employers. And I think that is very specific to the individual, the nature of the industry as well. And I think creating more spaces for people to access services is key, both in work and outside of work. I've been a therapist for 10 years. I work predominantly in male heavy environments, and I'm strongly advocate for men's mental health, as you know. And I think it's just really important that we create inclusive spaces, whether that's at work or out of work. Statistics will tell us men don't access mental health services. That's not necessarily true. I think that men sometimes choose not to return to services, and that to me speaks about the service, not the person accessing it. So typically, mental health services, particularly counselling and therapy, have been very sort of female designed spaces, typically female counsellors. And I think, that's all needing really a bit of a makeover and a change, so that we start thinking about how we make those spaces more accessible to men.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you both for your thoughts on that. We'll continue the conversation after this.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch Podcast, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Build relationships with the ultimate goal of growing your business. OBCN.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. We are coming to the final stint of the show. I can't believe how quickly time has gone, but we've been joined today by James Constable and Rebecca Leesey, who are two absolute advocates for supporting people and supporting men's mental health and mental health and really giving the people around them the platform to absolutely thrive. James, I'm keen to talk about role models, if that's okay, because I think that's... something that is really, really important, whether it be like if we talk about kind of your own experience, e.g. yourself, whether it be as a footballer or whether it be in your current role, or I think Oxford United, I think it would be unfair not to talk about Vauxhall at the moment with the great work he's doing. How important is it to have that role model, whether it be in a business environment or whether it be in a football environment?
We're so fortunate. I think that's the first thing to say, to have someone of his caliber like doing what he's doing. I think the football club as well, with the Can We Talk campaign and their links with sort of Baton of Hope and the suicide prevention training we've had. But just to have Will around the group, I think for me, I mentioned that I'm the point of call for a lot of stuff, but also the players, the staff play such an important role in that. We're all together. I'm probably with the players more and the staff more than my own family. It's just the nature of the way we work. We're away quite a lot, obviously overnights for games on Saturdays, late home Saturday nights, early Sunday morning. So we're together a lot of the time, and like I say, to notice those little changes, but to also have someone of his sort of personality, how he is around the players is phenomenal. And like I say, he's making a massive difference, not just here at this football club, but across the EFL. He's obviously been at Chef Wednesday, he's been at Cardiff, and we hear the exact same things come out of those football clubs, the changes he's made and the impact he's had on everybody. So, like I say, I feel really fortunate that we've got him as part of our group, and he makes a massive difference, not just on the pitch, off the pitch, the culture around everybody. It's amazing to have him as part of the football club.
Absolutely, and I think from a fan point of view, he's a player that you can really be proud of, isn't he? You know, he's and hopefully he won't mind me saying this. I'm sure he won't listen, but I'm surely he won't mind me saying this. Like, you know, he is he puts his foot in. He certainly puts his foot in, and he certainly gives the opponents a hard time against him. But actually, to be such a great man that makes such an impact to all of those around him, hats off to Will Vauxhall. Rebecca, I think this comes nicely onto role models in the business environment, and particularly business owners, if that's okay. So what can business owners do to really champion mental health from a role model point of view? You know, should they be open about their own mental health? Like, is that something they can do? What are some of the other things that they can consider? How do they make a safe environment to role model and to champion, similar to how James and Will have at Oxford United?
Well, I think it's fantastic to see people being so open and vulnerable, sharing their experiences. And I think it's absolutely important, especially in a business environment where I think particularly the corporate world has for a long time been on lockdown when it comes to emotions. And it's just not sustainable. I mean, I think we've realised that, you know, when we look at things like suicide rates, when we look at things like people's, when we look at the statistics around addiction and alcohol abuse, you know, we see that there are strong patterns recurring, that people are, you know, self-medicating, trying to regulate their nervous systems in environments that just aren't conducive for any sort of sustainable time, really. And I think one of the things that I'm really advocating for, and I do see a lot of change, is actually going back to, as you said in the beginning, Ben, you know, we are human beings and we have certain needs as humans that keep us well, physically and emotionally. And I think what's happened over time is those emotional needs have just kind of been pushed so far back that it's almost as if, you know, we have been expected to operate, you know, on no sleep. To sort of completely separate from anything that might be going on emotionally at home, to not need to eat or have proper breaks, you know, and this is like completely contrary to what we know we need as human beings. These are our basic needs. So if we think about our psychological well-being, you know, we can't possibly start thinking about fulfilling our best potential if we haven't got our basic physiological needs in place. So things like being able to sleep properly, you know, and then that starts to get into this pattern that I see daily recurring in my private practice of individuals who are incredibly stressed, have far too much work on their plates, frankly, not enough downtime, no real kind of channel for talking about their feelings or what's going on, you know, a crippling fear of being misinterpreted as being weak or a burden to somebody if they do share their problems. And I just think as society and sort of, and in the business world, we are just come, you know, we have created a perfect storm for mental health conditions to breed, really. So in terms of role modeling, I think it's really important that we come back to fundamentals here. We role model being human first and foremost. And this is something I do as a therapist in my own practice. Is, you know, just, and I say it regularly, just because I'm a psychotherapist doesn't mean I don't have my own stresses. Doesn't mean that, you know, I know how to kind of, you know, have the perfect night's sleep. I don't, of course I don't. But you know, what we can do is that we can share that we're all human. And actually that's a kind of a really important starting point. I think, you know, again, it goes back to sort of the individual and how comfortable they are sharing and to what point as well. I think it's really important. I think with anything is to think about, you know, what are we trying to achieve here? And I think in a business, for example, I think, you know, if it's about a leader sharing their vulnerability or their story, I think it's important, you know, with a view to what? Opening up conversations with other people, creating a psychologically safe environment, you know. So I think it's lots of things. I think it depends on the individual, but I do think it's this fundamentally, it's going back to being acknowledging that we are humans, you know, and we need to look after ourselves in that.
Totally, totally. We have got about 30 seconds left, so we are at the final stint. So in a sentence, it'd be amazing if we could both, or if both of you could leave our listeners with a lasting tip. It doesn't need to be something fresh. It could be what we've discussed already. If you would love our listeners just to think about one thing or be left with one tip following the show, what would be your lasting top tip? And James, I'm going to pick on you first, if that's okay.
Yeah, no worries. I think just be kind on yourself. I think again, as Rebecca touched on then, there's so much pressures day to day. Like you sort of, I think, find yourself going home, worried about certain things, stuff going around in your mind. I think I know as footballers, we really struggle when we stop playing, when we switch off from those you're so used to doing a certain thing day in, day out. You know where you are. You know you're here at this time, finish at that time. All of a sudden, you're out of work, or you're not playing anymore. And I think it's very easy to struggle without that routine. So I think for me, it's always nice to, like I say, get home, play with the kids, go out for a walk, take them out on their bikes. Take a moment just to sort of switch off from it all, and like I say, get yourself back to that place where you're sort of de-stressed, and you're not taking it back inside. You're not taking it home with you. You can manage to sort of switch off and enjoy the rest of your evening. Like say, you spend a lot of time at work, and you only spend probably a shorter time at home. So I think for me, yeah, just be kind on yourself. Take a moment before you get home, or when you get home, just it can be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just to get out of that sort of mindset of things you've been dealing with at work, and just enjoy the rest of the evening.
Totally, totally. And last but not least, Rebecca, what's your lasting top tip?
James, that's brilliant advice. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I would say for me, it's remember that your psychological health is as important as your physical health. There's no separating the two. We are intrinsically linked, mind and body. And just go and find somebody to talk to about it. just go and find someone to talk to about it. Hopefully, a trained professional. There is no stigma around this now. Treat any psychological issues, wounds, as you would physical ones. You wouldn't let a physical wound fester, get septic, get infected. You would deal with it. It's got to be the same for your mind.
Amazing, great advice. And I'm absolutely gutted it's the end of the show because I could have definitely spoken for another hour. But thank you so much to our two experts. We've had James Constable of Oxford United and Rebecca Lisi of Rebecca Lisi Therapy. So thank you so much to you both for your time and wonderful contribution for our listeners. This is the end of the show, but we are going to be back next week with brand new guests talking about another topic that impacts on local businesses. And finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show every single week on the radio or online at 11 a.m. Do look out for the podcast version, which is available on every major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. And if you prefer to look at my lovely guests, do have a look out for the video version, which goes out on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we will see you next week.